Blog Talk Radio.
The Late Shift with Stephen Bell is presented live and uncensored and contains adult language. The views, opinions, and verbiage expressed do not reflect those of LordsOfPain.net, Lords of Pain Radio, Blog Talk Radio, or any of their respective advertisers. That's all on me, for better or for worse. Regardless, listener discretion is advised. Now let's do this thing. Let's give it a bee-bop-bow. And now, coming to you live from the Late Shift Studios, recapping SmackDown Live here on Lords of Pain Radio, it's the Late Shift with Stephen Bell, with your host, well, me. Again, and yeah, still me. Let's do this thing, alright? Do the crunch guitar. Come on, love. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. My name is Stephen Bell, and, well, that's why my name is in the title. How are you guys doing? Hopefully everything has been well for you since the last time we got together to do this, which was yesterday, and almost 24 hours ago. It's almost been a full day, so you had to make it through a Tuesday before you were able to get to this point, unless you're listening to it after the fact, in which case, you know, hey, whenever you listen to this show last, I appreciate you coming back for another one. If you would like to find me on social media, it is very, very easy to do so. We can discuss things back and forth. You can share it around and help promote the show and all that good stuff because, you know, we have the little catch line in the schedule that it's all about your voice, the fan's voice here on LOP Radio. And, well, that's not just a catchy phrase, you know. It's the truth. That's the truth. We grow based upon you guys promoting us and telling your friends and all that, and we appreciate it here on LOP Radio, and I personally appreciate it here on The Late Shift. So, like I said, you can find me on social media. Just check me out on Twitter, at Stephen F. N. Bell. You can find me pretty easily there. On Facebook, just search for The Late Shift with Stephen Bell, and you will find my very own little page there through which to interact with me and all that good stuff. And again, I'm still pushing this thing. I'm on MySpace. I just rejoined MySpace. And man, The Late Shift is living large on there. I've got two connections, and one of them is my account. So really, I only have one connection. So, I mean, come on, guys. If you want to rejoin the MySpace revolution and get this ball a-rolling here, guys, man, we could blow that sumbitch up. I could be the biggest star on MySpace, and I would carry you guys along for the ride. I would not forget you, you know, once I attain my huge power, once I become the Maharaja of MySpace. Ooh, the MySpace Maharaja. I like that. I like the sounds of that. That's pretty awesome. So yeah, go hit up MySpace. Find me and help me become the MySpace Maharaja. Yeah, that's going to be really, really likely. But hey, it's worth a shot, is it not? As mentioned, I hope that you guys have been doing pretty all right. We just did the show last night covering Raw and all that good stuff. And coming up this evening, we have got SmackDown, of course, which is heading towards Money in the Bank coming up this Sunday, which is going to be a pretty awesome show. I think it's got potential, certainly. It's looking like it's going to be pretty damn cool. I mean, who really knows for sure, I guess, until we get there. You have to see the execution go down. But last year's Money in the Bank, we were going into it, and it looked like it was going to be all right, you know? It looked like it was going to be a fairly strong show. Had a good main event to it and everything like that. It was looking pretty damn good. And then it wound up being like maybe one of the best Money in the Banks ever, you know? So, yeah, it definitely had a very, very strong Money in the Bank ladder match. It had a really strong main event. It had a very memorable and awesome ending. And, yeah, Money in the Bank last year kicked ass and took names. This year, well, there's a few more names that are added to the list that it can take because there is a women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And I think we're all interested in seeing how that plays out. I really think that the women in general are kind of the key to this Money in the Bank because on top of the fact that we don't know how the women's Money in the Bank ladder match is going to go, we're also very curious as to what's up with Lana. Is Lana going to be decent? Is Lana going to suck? What's the deal with Lana? She's a huge intangible in all of this, but she has herself a women's championship match. We're going to talk about all of that here in just a moment as I give, as per usual, you know, when we come up on the show right before the pay-per-view, I always make with my predictions. I'm going to do that here in just a moment. But first, I wanted to get something out of the way. I mentioned on last night's show, the Monday show, that during the Heat Seeker, we were talking about the private lives of professional wrestlers and things of that nature. There is currently a fairly popular, famous wrestler guy out there who is going through a divorce. Whether or not that's really anybody's business, you know, it's one thing to be curious and read the headline, but, you know, should it really impact your opinion of them as a performer? Should you be contacting them and messing with them on social media and things of that nature? All that, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, we had a conversation about that. And along the way, I used myself as something of an example in talking about some of the things that I'm like the lowest grade of public figure that you could possibly have, I think, aside from like maybe the guy who appears in the mattress commercials, you know, like the local guy who's like, come on down to Big Jim's Mattresses. And like the guy who just like is laying on the mattress. You know what I mean? Aside from that, I think that I'm pretty low grade as it pertains to public figure, and I've had people mess with me a good little bit. And in the course of doing so, I mentioned the fact that I'm in the process of going through a divorce. I had not really spoken about it before. I don't intend to really be speaking about it any further beyond this point, but I wanted to clear up one point. The wrestler guy in question here going through the divorce and everything, it is alleged that there was infidelity involved in that. And I just wanted to make clear, because I had a couple of questions about it, that my marriage did not involve any infidelity. My divorce does not hinge upon any sort of infidelity or anything of that sort. It's just, you know, it's just like the majority of relationships. Most relationships don't work out just simply because of the fact that it was an ill fit. You know what I mean? There was no animosity. There's no ill will. Neither of us wish any harm to the other or anything like that. We're co-parenting doggies and things of that nature. So, you know, it's not like there's any sort of animosity or bad vibes or anything of that sort going on. I just wanted to clear that up for the couple of people who asked, and for I didn't make it very clear. I was drawing the line between myself and this superstar who was going through a divorce, and perhaps I didn't delineate it quite clearly enough that my situation is not the same as his alleged situation. My relationship just didn't work out. You know, shit happens. It goes that way. You know, most relationships actually don't work out if you really look at it from a certain perspective. And hey, you know, for those of you who are out there working it and kicking ass and taking names and got a good relationship going on, more power to you. You know, I hope that you guys kick ass and take names and just keep on rolling with your badass relationship forever and ever. Amen. But in my personal case, didn't quite work out, but there's nothing wonky about it. There was no, ain't nobody cheat on nobody, none of that bullshit. So I just wanted to clarify that before we move along, and it is time to move along, because as mentioned, I'm not a big fan of speaking about my personal shit unless there is a good reason to do so, and I probably won't be bringing up that shit anymore for the foreseeable future, or maybe not ever again. But what I am going to be bringing up is predictions. That's right, we are right before a pay-per-view. It's coming up this Sunday. It's Money in the Bank. Shout out what you think. And we're about to find out what I personally think. I'm not necessarily a shorty, but, you know, hey, depends on who I'm standing beside, I suppose. Either way, it is time now for your favorite and mine, the Heat Seeker. Indeed, it's time for the Heat Seeker, and this time around I'm giving my predictions for Money in the Bank. As mentioned, it's coming up this Sunday. Not a lot of matches announced on the card. That seems to be a common theme here recently. That was the case when we were going into Extreme Rules. There were only a few matches really on the card. I think it was like five or six or something like that, and most of them were title matches. It was just kind of, you know, okay, sure. And that's kind of the thing that we're in now. We've got a lot of matches that have big stakes in them. As a matter of fact, every single match that is currently announced for the show has pretty big stakes of one sort or another. I'm pretty sure they're going to throw something else at it for a, you know, the purposes of like a pre-show match or something like that. I don't even know what that would end up being, because they haven't really had any ancillary things going on. You could maybe see like Breezango taking on the Colognes, maybe. Maybe that would be a thing that would happen on the pre-show. I could see that being a potential thing, but it's not going to be a women's match because all the women are accounted for. Most of your upper mid-card guys are accounted for. I mean, I guess you could see Mojo involved in something, or I mean, I don't even really know what the hell they would throw at a a pre-show match. So I guess my early prediction for a pre-show match, and this is incredibly, incredibly just throwing it at the wall and not officially official. This isn't even a real prediction, but I'm just going to throw it out there because I think it might happen, would be Breezango taking on the Colognes, because why the hell not? You know what I mean? Get Breezango on the show. People are digging them right now. It'll get people excited and happy and getting into their chairs so that we can kick off the show proper. And speaking of kicking off the show proper, I get the feeling we're going to begin with one of the Money in the Bank ladder matches. We tend to kind of do that on Money in the Bank over the last few years, but that's not where I'm going to begin. I'm going to begin with the Tag Team Championship match. Yes, indeed, it is the Usos taking on the New Day. And this is an interesting one because it's very strange to me. Shane McMahon is an interesting creature when you really look at his track record there as the SmackDown commissioner guy. You know, he's telling Lana that you've got to earn a shot at the championship. And I understand that because Lana's never had a singles match. Sure, but there's been plenty of other times where it's like, oh, you've got to earn your way into this match. Mojo Rawley had to, you know, face the WWE champion for even a shot at making it into the Money in the Bank ladder match, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, the New Day just walk into the door. They haven't even had a match yet. Well, they have now, but you know what I mean. When it was announced, they had not even had a match yet. They just showed up on the show, and they are immediately handed a tag team championship match just based on, I guess, like past merit or something like that. They didn't beat anybody. Meanwhile, you've got guys like American Alpha who aren't even on the fucking show. Like, when's the last time we even saw American Alpha on SmackDown? It's been more than a month, at least. I don't know what the hell the deal is. I don't know if maybe one of them is hurt and they're just not saying anything about it. I don't keep up with the house show circuit and stuff, so I don't know if maybe they're working house show matches at the very least, but it's just very strange to me that of all these teams floating around out there, you've got hide nor hair being seen of American Alpha. You know, I mean, hell, I think we've seen the Ascension since we last saw American Alpha. It's just, it's kind of unusual, and maybe it is indicative of the fact maybe they're kind of saving them. Maybe they got plans for them, and they kind of want it to be kind of a big deal once they roll them out once again, or who the hell knows, but at this given point, it is kind of strange that they're not around because they are former tag team champions. They've beaten multiple people. The New Day just walked in the door, were handed this opportunity. They didn't beat the Ascension. They didn't beat Breezango. They ain't beat nobody to get this opportunity, but they are the longest reigning tag team champs in WWE history. Well, you know, over there on the Raw side of things, but still, it counts, and because it spanned, you know, pre-brand split and stuff, you know what I mean? So I get it. You know, they've earned it via the merits of their past accomplishments, but it is a bit strange that they were just handed the opportunity without doing a damn thing to earn it. Now, this match is an interesting one. This is an interesting one because I think it's going to be good. The Usos and the New Day have had good matches in the past, and I don't think that this is going to be any different. They've actually had, you know, extended feuds in the past, and they were pretty good. You know, this one is probably going to be pretty damn good, I am predicting, but I don't know exactly who to pick here. I think that this is one that's going to carry on for a little while. I'm thinking that the Usos are going to get the victory by hook or by crook. They'll either cheat to win, or there'll be a disqualification of some sort in which the titles don't change hands or whatever the hell. But either way, the bottom line of it is that I don't see the New Day walking out as the new champions. It's definitely a possibility. You know, it's absolutely a possibility, but I just don't see it happening that quickly. That would really kind of bring in the New Day and kind of lord them over the entirety of the SmackDown tag division and just be like, okay, here they are. They're better than every single one of you, so screw you all. They need to work for it a little bit at the very least. They didn't work to get the championship opportunity. They at least need to work for it a little bit before they get the actual championships. So I'm predicting that they will not win the titles. As to who wins the match, I think it is going to wind up being the I don't know. It's going to be one of those two scenarios, I think, that I mentioned. Either the Usos are going to cheat to win, or the New Day are the Usos are going to get disqualified, and the New Day are going to win by DQ but not get the championships, which will lead to further chicanery on down the road. But I don't know which one to go with. I'm going to say that the Usos are going to get themselves disqualified in some way, shape, form, or fashion. They're going to get themselves disqualified. So the New Day will win the match, but they will not win the championships, in my opinion. This is not going to come to a clean finish. I just do not see this coming to a clean finish. Speaking of which, we have Naomi taking on Lana. That's another one that is on the surface, you would think, okay, this is pretty easy to predict. Naomi, of course, is going to win because Lana has never had a singles match. But at the same time, they might want to pull the trigger and do something crazy. They were just talking about it on Bring It to the Table about how, you know, old Peter Rosenberg guy was talking about how, as a fan, he would be kind of pissed off if Lana won the championship because it's kind of unearned. She hasn't really earned it. She's never even had a singles match. So here she's going to walk in and win the championship from Naomi, of all people, who has busted her ass for years and years and years to get to the position where she is now. Well, it was brought up by, I believe it was Corey Graves who mentioned, but yeah, if she wins, would you pay to see her get her butt kicked later? Would you pay to see her lose it? And the admission is yes. And Lana's a big intangible at this given point in time. We don't know what to expect from her. She might go out there. She might suck. And if she goes out there and she absolutely sucks and winds up winning the title, I think a lot of people are going to be kind of pissed off. At the same time, there's going to be people who cheer for her just because she's Lana. However, if she goes out there and she acquits herself well, if she puts on a good performance and she does, you know, just a good job in the match with Naomi and winds up winning, I'm not entirely sold on the fact that a lot of people won't be kind of happy with it. You know, at least your mainstream fans would probably be kind of cool with it. But a lot of people, either which way you slice it, if Lana wins, regardless, a lot of people would be pissed off. I think that the majority of people would be pissed off that Naomi had lost the championship to somebody who is just now getting their first ever opportunity. There are intangibles in the mix here, though. Lana is not just an intangible. It is the entirety of the circumstance that is intangible. It was mentioned even this evening. Lana came out to observe Naomi in a match against Tamina that happened on SmackDown, and that is an advantage that Lana has. Lana can watch tape on Naomi. Lana can come out there and watch Naomi live in the ring. She can scout Naomi. But Naomi cannot scout Lana because there's nothing to scout. There's nothing to see. There is no telling what Lana is or is not capable of when she gets into the ring, which is an interesting thing to play with here. So yeah, I think that it is a very distinct possibility that Lana winds up winning the SmackDown Women's Championship for those reasons. You know, because it would be, you know, kind of like the shock factor and things of that nature. Or it would also kind of be that, you know, hey, Naomi didn't have a chance to scout her. Lana was able to put one over on her. And it depends on what they want to do with her. If they want to roll with this whole heel thing that they're trying to force because of the fact that, you know, she's supposed to be a heel, they want to keep her a heel, they're having her do heely things. But as we saw last week, a lot of the fans like Lana. They're cheering for Lana. So are they going to turn into the skid and go ahead and slowly but surely make Lana a babyface? Or are they going to stick, you know, steadfastly to this whole heel thing? Well, who knows? We don't know at the moment. But I do think that it is possible that Lana cheats and gets the victory. However, I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. I do think that Naomi will wind up getting the victory here. I think she's going to beat Lana clean. But hopefully Lana does, as mentioned, acquit herself well. There is a possibility, I suppose, that Lana would get herself disqualified or something like that. But this is going to go to a clean finish, I believe. When I say clean, I mean it's going to go to a pinfall or submission. Probably more than likely a pinfall, more so than a submission. That doesn't mean that Lana won't cheat to win. I do see us. This one is maybe one of the most difficult to predict on an entire card of matches that are, frankly, kind of difficult to predict. This one's very difficult because of the just sheer intangible that is Lana all around. We just don't know what to expect from her. We don't know what to expect from them and how they're going to present her character, et cetera, on down the line. So that really just makes this whole thing a big question mark. However, I do think that Naomi will wind up walking out with the championship. It would be a little bit of – I have to agree with some of the sentiment that's out there and with what Peter Rosenberg had to say on Bring It to the Table. It would be a little bit of a slap in the face to Naomi to have her work as hard as she has for all these years to finally get to the top and be the champion, and then she just offhandedly loses to Lana just because Lana's hot. You know, I mean, that's really kind of the only thing that Lana's ever really had going for her. She was a good manager and stuff like that. She talks well and stuff, but you know what I mean. The overwhelming majority of people who cheer for Lana cheer for her because she's smoking hot. And she hasn't proven herself in the ring in any way. She hasn't proven herself to be shitty. She hasn't proven herself to be good. Whereas Naomi has proven herself time and time again. So we'll see. We'll see, but I think that Naomi gets the victory over Lana to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship. Though I'm I'm only like 60-40 on that. I think it is a very, very, very real and distinct possibility that Lana wins the women's championship on Sunday. I think it is a very real possibility. But we shall see. We shall see. Continuing the championship trend here, though, we also have Jinder Mahal taking on Randy Orton. It is a singles match for the WWE Championship. There are a lot of random little things in this mix here that are going to inform the prediction, I suppose. We already know that John Cena is coming back on the 4th of July, and it certainly does seem rather fitting were they to just slot Jinder Mahal and John Cena into a program with each other. You know, it just fits. He's coming back on America's birthday, and he's John Cena. You know, he's the, you know, military-esque guy with the salute and all that good stuff and the dog tags and all that. And, you know, he's kind of got a military vibe about him. He's big flag-waving USA guy, you know, kind of, or at least has been presented as such in the past. It would make sense for him to come back on the 4th of July and immediately start an issue with Jinder Mahal. Now, the question is, would that be for the championship? Would we see SummerSlam, for instance? Would it be John Cena going for his 17th championship, trying to break the record at SummerSlam against Jinder Mahal? Or, I mean, wouldn't the feud work just as well if Jinder Mahal loses the championship to Randy Orton and then goes on to face John Cena as just, you know, kind of an upper echelon heel? I think that would work just fine. It would, I mean, either way, they're going to cheer Cena and boo Mahal. You know, well, most, you know what I mean. I think the dynamic would be kind of the same either way. That's a feud that doesn't necessarily need the championship if you break it right down, because it's predicated upon jingoistic, old school wrestling, you know, USA versus non-USA, USA versus a foreigner type, you know, bullshit that I'm frankly kind of tired of in this day and age. But, I mean, it works, I guess. So I do see the possibility for them to roll with that, with or without the championship. I guess the question that hangs over everything is Randy Orton. Who would Randy Orton wind up defending the championship against? Let's say Randy Orton wins on Sunday. He gets the championship back. He then beats Jinder in a rematch, in the contractually obligated rematch. And then we move into John Cena versus Jinder Mahal as we head towards SummerSlam. That's got Mahal all sorted out. But then where does Randy Orton go? Who is Randy Orton feud with going into SummerSlam? Do they do something kind of babyfacey? You know, do they throw him in there against a Shinsuke Nakamura or something like that? Or an AJ Styles even? Do they do champion versus champion, put him in there against Owens? None of those really feel right. Baron Corbin even. None of those feel right. Though, honestly, I guess they could be forced into feeling right. I mean, we still got a little ways to go before SummerSlam gets here. It's like 2 months from now. So there's plenty of time for them to work something up. I just don't – I don't know. It's too gray area. None of that feels like a huge main event match unless they went with Nakamura. Nakamura versus Orton, I think, would be – that would be an interesting draw. I think that would be very, very much akin to a few years ago when John Cena faced Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam. It was one of those matches where it was like a lot of people are intrigued by it. This is a guy that's got a lot of fanfare behind him, a lot of fan support. He's an indie fave, if you will, an internet favorite at the very least, I guess you could say. I can see the intrigue there, but I just don't know that they would go for something like that. I think they're saving Nakamura for things down the road or something. I don't know. It's just a vibe that I get. So the other thing, I mentioned there were multiple things that make this a little bit difficult to call, is the fact that Jinder mentioned this evening that Bob Orton Jr. is going, you know, Randy's dad, is going to be in the front row along with other wrestling legends. They will be in St. Louis. That is an old school hotbed for professional wrestling. That used to be one of the biggest territories out there in the country. So, you know, I know that Harley Race recently underwent some real issues there. He broke both of his legs and messed himself up pretty bad. But, I mean, there's a potential for him to be there. He typically is whenever they do something of this sort. So is Orton going to wind up coming out on top of things and looking good in front of his hometown and yay for the USA and all that crap? Or is Jinder going to get a real crushing defeat over Randy Orton? And if that is the case, then once again the question arises, what the hell does Randy Orton do? You know, where does Randy go after this? If Randy Orton loses in St. Louis in front of his dad and his home crowd and all these wrestling legends and all this stuff, what does that do to Randy Orton? You know, that doesn't do him very many favors, at the very least, you know what I mean? So I don't even know where the hell he would go after that. But it's again, that's really up in the air. Randy Orton is there's question marks hanging over where Randy Orton proceeds from here, regardless of whether he wins or loses. At the end of the day, I do think that Jinder Mahal wins. I think there will be chicanery. I think WWE has a very strong history of guys losing in their hometown, and I do think that they're going to. I think that SummerSlam is going to be built around John Cena going for championship number 17 against Jinder Mahal. That just makes a lot of sense to me, and I believe it's been rumored and stuff like that, but I haven't read any of it. I've seen some offhanded mention of it on Twitter and stuff. But it just feels right to me. They're hyping this up so big. It's the 4th of July. I mean, it fits together too well. You know what I mean? So I could definitely see that scenario. So I'm picking Jinder Mahal to retain the WWE Championship at Money in the Bank. Though, I mean, I would rather see Orton win it. Just because, again, I mentioned all these question marks that are hanging over where Randy Orton would go afterwards. I don't mind question marks. I kind of like question marks. That means that we're going to maybe get something fresh and interesting. So who knows? But Jinder Mahal, I think, will get the victory. We then move on to the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. The first ever time that this has happened, it does, of course, give the winner a shot at the SmackDown Women's Championship anytime they damn well please over the course of the next year. We've got Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Natalya, Tamina, and Carmella all involved in the match. Now, when this match was first announced, I talked about it here on The Late Shift, the Tuesday edition of The Late Shift, and my early prediction was Carmella, just because it kind of makes the most sense. You know, Becky can be inserted into the women's division, you know, the championship picture very, very easily. She's a former women's champion. She slots into there very, very easily. She doesn't need the briefcase in order to get to that position. Charlotte is the same way. Charlotte doesn't need the briefcase in order to get into that position. She's already arguably the top female in the entire company, probably the top female on SmackDown. I think she has usurped Becky Lynch for that title since she came over in the shakeup. So Charlotte really doesn't need it. Natalya could use it, but I don't see Natalya as Miss Money in the Bank. That just, I don't know. It seems no fit. I just don't think that is vibing. And Tamina is the same way. Tamina seems like a background character in the women's division. I mean, no offense to her as a result of saying that, you know, but she's a little bit older than everybody else, you know, call a spade a spade. She's a little bit older than everybody else. She doesn't quite have the wrestling pedigree that everybody else does in terms of being able to perform really, really well in the ring. She's all right, but she's not, you know, she's just not as good as the other women. I mean, I'm trying to find a nice way to say it, and there is no nice way to say it, I suppose. Or at least we haven't seen her be as good as the other women. I don't mean to disparage Tamina because she does all right. She did a good job tonight on SmackDown. But when you break it all down like that, Becky could easily get into the women's championship scene all by her lonesome. Same for Charlotte. Natalya just doesn't feel like that's the vibe that they're – I'm not vibing on that. And Tamina, I'm not vibing on that either. Carmella's the odd one out. Carmella, she's not quite established enough to just immediately be inserted into the SmackDown Women's Championship picture. This is something that could really boost her career. And she's got Ellsworth. Ellsworth, we've been talking about him the last few weeks. Ellsworth is a guy – he could be carrying the briefcase for her. He's just her little bitch boy. That could be highly entertaining. And I don't know, just Carmella's vibe, the entire way that she has carried herself since showing up on SmackDown, she seems like she would be a very good Miss Money in the Bank. Like, she would be very good at just coming in there at exactly the right time. She's got that sneaky vibe about her. Carmella just seems like the best choice, in my opinion, so I'm riding with it. I don't know if she's the smartest choice. I guess the smartest choice would be Becky or Charlotte. But Carmella, to me, just feels like that's the way to go. If I were booking it, it's Carmella all day. Carmella is the best suited to be Miss Money in the Bank, so I'm just going to ride with my gut on that one. Carmella will win the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Which brings us to the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match. We got Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and Shinsuke Nakamura. This is an interesting one. I'm not exactly sure who to pick. You got Sami Zayn in the mix, who I think that it would behoove him to be kind of the underdog guy, but at the same time, this feels like Money in the Bank is better suited towards a heel. Let's just put it that way. You know what I mean? Babyfaces can win, and babyfaces have won in the past. But, I mean, the two times that someone has flat out been like, I challenge you for a match at this specific date, instead of just running in and taking advantage, you know, being an opportunist, the two times that that has happened, they've both lost, and they've both been babyfaces. It was John Cena. Oh, no, Rob Van Dam didn't lose. I apologize. Rob Van Dam won. But you know what I mean. That doesn't – I don't see that, you know. I just don't get that vibe. And Sammy doesn't seem like a guy who would want to be sneaky. He doesn't seem like a guy who would run out there and attack somebody from behind or something like that. AJ does seem like that kind of a guy, but he's rocking a real babyface vibe right now, and I think that they're really wanting to roll with that. And besides, much like Becky and Charlotte in the women's match, AJ doesn't need it. AJ could be inserted into the main event picture very, very easily. So that leaves us with Kevin Owens, Dolph Ziggler, Shinsuke, and Baron Corbin. Shinsuke, we'll come back to him. KO is the United States champion. I don't think he needs the Money in the Bank. I think he's holding down the United States championship very, very well. I would love to see him win Money in the Bank. I think he would be a fantastic Mr. Money in the Bank, frankly. But I think they're just going to let him roll with the Face of America thing for the next little bit. I don't see Kevin Owens winning this. Same goes for Dolph Ziggler. Dolph is the on paper in kayfabe, Dolph is the favorite because he's the one who has been in the most Money in the Bank ladder matches. He has won a Money in the Bank ladder match, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Dolph's not going to win this. I don't see it. I mean, there is a scenario in which it could happen. Maybe they want to give Dolph one last strong run before he leaves, you know, and he's proven that he's a good Mr. Money in the Bank. I don't know. I'm not getting – Dolph feels like he's just kind of here as an anchor in the match. You know what I mean? You got Shinsuke, who I said we'd come back to. Shinsuke has that intangible about him. I could easily see Shinsuke winning this match, but at the same time, I'm not entirely sure that he needs to. Shinsuke Nakamura doesn't need to be Mr. Money in the Bank in order to make waves and get to the position where he's going to be the SmackDown champion at some point. He will be WWE champion at some point. It's just kind of a matter of time and waiting it out and seeing where it all goes before that happens. I don't think that Money in the Bank is necessarily a good fit for him, but frankly, I do think that he's my second most favorite. But the guy who I think has the most to gain from being Mr. Money in the Bank, the guy that I think that would use that briefcase to a T, that would be very, very good at taking advantage and running out there unexpectedly and winning the championship and just the typical Money in the Bank stuff, I think it fits Baron Corbin like a glove. Baron just he's on the verge right now, you know? He's kind of vaguely in the same position as Carmella, though he is a little bit farther down the road than Carmella is. He is just the one solid win away from being in the main event picture. He's almost a main eventer. He could be slotted in there right now, and it wouldn't quite feel right, but he would perform well, and people would buy it. You know what I mean? If Baron Corbin were the number one contender going into this pay-per-view, I don't think anybody would be sweating it or anything. People would be like, okay, cool, I get that. But to main event SummerSlam or something of that sort, Baron Corbin's not quite there yet. Money in the Bank is something that could get him there. And I also just, again, I think that it is something that could really – he would wear it well, I guess is what I am getting at here. Baron Corbin would perform well as Mr. Money in the Bank. He would be arrogant about it. He would use it to attack people left and right. And he's got that vibe about him. He has never once been shy about attacking from behind. Just ask Sami Zayn or anybody else that's run across him. He's exactly the kind of guy who would take advantage, full advantage, utmost advantage, of being Mr. Money in the Bank. So Baron Corbin is my pick for this thing. I do think that Shinsuke is a good backup pick, and I think Sami's in the mix, but Baron Corbin just feels right to me. Baron Corbin will win the Money in the Bank ladder match, in my opinion, to get a shot at some point at the WWE Championship, and I think that he will take full advantage of that shot at some undisclosed time in the future. We'll see, though. We shall see. So, recapping again real quick before we move along, I've got Naomi defeating Lana to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship. I have got The New Day winning via disqualification over the Usos, but not winning the Tag Team Championships. I've got Jinder Mahal retaining the WWE Championship over Randy Orton, probably via some sort of chicanery with the Singh brothers involved. I say that Carmella will win the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, and I think that Baron Corbin will win the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. So a little heel heavy, especially as it pertains to your main event matches, but that's not outside the realm of possibility here lately, you know. Things have been a little heel heavy here as of late, and I don't necessarily think that that's going to change. This is one of the most interesting Money in the Banks that we've come across over the last few years, in my opinion, because it really is up in the air. I'm not sure about any of these picks. There is not a single one of the picks that I just made that I'm like, yo, yeah, that's a foregone conclusion. No. I think the closest one is Carmella. You know, and even that is iffy at best. But I just think that, I don't know, Carmella feels right. Am I the only one who thinks that? Maybe I am. But all of these are kind of toss-ups. This is going to be a very interesting pay-per-view. It's going to be fun to watch it play out. I get the feeling there's going to be some surprises somewhere along the way. I look forward to seeing how it all goes. I think that we could see a cash-in at the pay-per-view, and I think it will be on the women's side of things. I could definitely see a scenario in which Carmella wins Money in the Bank, Naomi defeats Lana, and then out comes Carmella to attack Naomi and win the SmackDown Women's Championship. I do think that that could very easily happen. I'm not quite going to predict it, but mark it down. I do think that is a very distinct possibility. I don't so much see that happening with the World Championship because, again, there's the John Cena thing floating out there here in, you know, just under a month. So that really kind of throws a lot of question out there as to what's going to be going on with the championship or if he'll even be involved in the championship. Who the fuck knows at this point? You know what I mean? And that's that. That is the predictions for Money in the Bank. Went a little bit longer than I anticipated I would be talking about it, but these are some intriguing matches. And like I said, none of them are just obvious. There's no easy picks in the mix here, in my opinion. It's going to be a good show. I hope that you enjoy it. I know for damn sure that I am going to enjoy it. And, well, did I enjoy SmackDown? Did you enjoy SmackDown? Was it a good SmackDown? Lots of questions about that as well. We'll talk about it all here in just a moment. We will recap and grade tonight's episode of SmackDown Live in just a moment. But first, we do indeed, as always, have a few bills to pay here on LOP Radio, so I invite you to check out this right here. All right, we are back in the mix here, and it is time to talk about SmackDown Live. This was in terms of the main event, this is what everybody predicted would be the main event. I predicted it last week. I saw a lot of other people predicting it. We knew full well before it was even announced last night on Raw, or maybe it was announced prior. I don't know. I first heard about it last night on Raw. We all knew it was going to be a six-man tag in the main event. You knew it. The three good guy Money in the Bank participants against the three bad guy Money in the Bank participants, we all knew that it was coming. So that was kind of a foregone conclusion, a little bit predictable. But the rest of it was a little bit up in the air to a degree. That is not to say that some things didn't kind of become predictable over the course of the show. We were coming this evening from the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana. We're going there for WrestleMania next year, so they're kind of hyping that up. And speaking of hyping that up, we had the hosts of this year's WrestleMania coming out to begin the show. The New Day make their way out there. They have got some help from the Soul Rebels, who are, you know, a Bourbon Street band there from New Orleans, and they were helping playing them out to the ring, and it was a good time. Kofi takes the mic and gets the crowd to give it up for the band, and then they hype the fact that WrestleMania 34, as mentioned, will be right there in NOLA. And Xavier comments that the New Day are going to defeat the Usos this Sunday. They will be bringing the titles back to New Orleans as champions at WrestleMania 34. So he's not only predicting that they'll win the tag team titles, he's predicting that they'll win them and then hold them for like damn near a year to walk into WrestleMania as the champions. We'll see about that. But before they can finish their usual, you know, the SmackDown WWE, the music interrupts, and out comes the Usos. They make their way out there. They raising their titles in the New Day's face, talking some smack. They talk about how they're the ones who have been putting in work. They've been grinding on this stuff. They've been working their way to the top. They will be the ones to leave with the titles this Sunday. But then more music hits. Out come Breezango. Tyler Breeze and Fandango, they come out there. They're kind of making fun of the Usos and talking some smack and having some fun and being Breezango. They are then interrupted by the Colognes. They come out and talk a little bit of smack as well, and then we don't even have to wait for the commercial break before, you know, it's not like we went to the commercial, then came back and we're like, Shane McMahon made this a tag. No, we knew. Apparently this match was scheduled. They just didn't tell us. It was indeed the New Day and Breezango taking on the Colognes and the Usos, which is part of why I think that we may wind up with Breezango and the Colognes on the pre-show, because, of course, the New Day and the Usos are occupied there on the main show. This was exactly what you would expect it to be. Mountain tags all over the place. The heels wind up getting some Healy stuff done and cutting off the ring and blah, 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 blah. You know, the usual thing for a match of this style. I'm getting a little tired of matches like this. I pay attention to them, and they're enjoyable because I get to see these guys work, you know, and I like everybody involved in this match. I think they're all good workers and stuff. It's just that, man, I mean, how often can you do crap like this? You know what I mean? American Alpha can't even make TV, and yet you're going to shove this kind of a match down our throats on an almost weekly basis. Because, again, I think I just mentioned last week, maybe the week before, when's the last time we had an episode of SmackDown in which there wasn't a multi-person tag team match? It happens every single week. Every single week. Now I understand getting more and more people on TV. You want to get people out there and hype up some things and this and that and have some fun. And, yeah, I'm all for all that good stuff. But, I mean, it's just... I don't know, man. It gets a little old, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say here. It gets a little old. We wind up towards the end of this whole thing. The fans are chanting for the New Day as Xavier Woods gets the hot tag, comes in there, unloads on both of the Usos, but Jimmy is tagged in as well. Kofi then tags in. He springboards in there, taking out Jimmy Uso. Kofi nails the boom drop, but Uso is able to block Trouble in Paradise. Kofi, though, he comes right back around, spins one more again, and nails it this time. So he wasn't going to be denied as it pertained to Trouble in Paradise this evening. Jay ran in there to break up the pinfall attempt. Fandango then takes out Jay, but they both fall out to the floor. Primo tags in and goes for the backstabber, but Kofi's able to block his way out of that. Woods tags in. We've got the rapid tags just all over the place here. Woods tags in, goes up to the top as Kofi is holding Primo down. He stomps him on the chest. We get the one, we get the two, we get the three. Your winners of this match are the New Day and Breezango. So they're looking good heading into Money in the Bank. Afterwards, they're all dancing around and celebrating to the New Day's music. Meanwhile, the Usos are not looking very happy as they stand on the ramp with their titles. So, you know, again, I do think that this could be easily spun into Breezango versus the Colognes for the pre-show, because I just don't know what other match they would throw out there. I mean, I guess they could maybe do, you know, Mojo and his partner against – who will we be talking about shortly? Yeah, I just note that I just said his partner. Mojo and his partner taking on maybe like the Ascension or some crap like that if they just wanted to throw something at the wall and see if it sticks. But Breezango and the Colognes, it's predicated in a match that happened on SmackDown this week, you know, the match we just spoke about. I could see that being kind of a pre-show deal and, you know, just get the crowd happy because Breezango, and they would probably win. And yeah, and it feels smart to me. And that's what I would put in that position at the very, very least. But we move on from there. We are told that Charlotte will be taking on Natalya this evening, something of a preview for the Women's Money in the Bank as we go to commercial break. When we return, AJ Styles is backstage. He's talking to Shinsuke Nakamura. Sami Zayn comes walking up, and AJ had kind of warned Nakamura beforehand. He likes to talk, basically. He comes up. He wants to talk strategy. He just won't shut up. He's blah, 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 doing the typical Sami Zayn thing that has kind of become something of a hallmark for him ever since he moved over to SmackDown and is apparently something of a reflection of who he is in real life. He just talks and talks and talks. He's wanting high fives and stuff. He's kind of being an annoying dude. He winds up leaving, and Shinsuke looks at AJ and kind of smiles and says, "I like him." And AJ's like, "Yeah, you would." So, yeah, Sammy has a friend in Shinsuke Nakamura. Considering the match that they had last year, yeah, they should be very, very good friends because they put on a fucking masterpiece against one another. But moving on from there, we've got Dasha Fuente is backstage talking to Mojo Rawley. He is, you know, she's asking him about his opportunity last week to make it into the Money in the Bank, how he came up short. He thanks SmackDown Commissioner Shane McMahon for giving him the opportunity last week. And he says, you know, he came up short. And, you know, Jinder Mahal, man, he'd give him props. He's not the same guy that I was beating up, you know, a few months ago. He's a different dude now. And I'm kind of devastated by the loss. I've been beating myself all week. But part of me is glad that I lost because I know how hard that I bounced back from losing. And I know I'm going to be better than ever. He's getting hype. He says the best from Mojo Rawley is yet to come. And then Zack Ryder walks up. Yes, the broski himself, Zack Ryder, Long Island Iced Z, walks up, gives him some props for his match last week. Man, you did a great job, but you know what? I think we have some unfinished business as a tag team. Mojo agrees with this, and it looks like everything is hunky-dory. So maybe the Hype Bros are going to get back together, which I'm in favor of, because Zack Ryder at least makes Mojo mildly tolerable. I just really don't fucking like Mojo Rawley. Zack, though, I do dig Zack. I think everybody digs Zack on some level. So he does make him a little more tolerable and makes Mojo a little bit more okay. But if you saw the headline for this post, the post that I make on Lords of Pain, you know, hyping the show, I had a Mojo heel turn, ? I don't know. I'm kind of getting a vibe. I have been for the last couple of weeks. When Mojo was complaining to Shane last week, when he's all like, "Oh, I'm gonna bounce back," and he's too positive. You know what I mean? Last week on Talking Smack, he was just nothing. He sounded like fucking Tony Robbins or something. Just pure, just unadulterated positivity. And that's not really a character. And if it is a character, I mean, even if you want to say that that is a character, it's not one that people are getting behind. People inherently just kind of don't like Mojo. I'm not the only one floating around out there. I'm sure there's plenty of people who do like Mojo, but most of them, I think, they either don't give a shit about the guy or they don't like him and they find him annoying. Annoying seems to be that is the phrase that pops up more often when I see discussions about or had discussions about Mojo Rawley. People find him annoying. So roll with it, in my opinion. I don't know. I'm just kind of getting a vibe here. He's having a tough time here lately. He can't seem to string things together. He had all this hype just a couple of months ago, and now all of a sudden he's a bottom feeder. What the hell? And then Zack Ryder shows up and is immediately just kind of like, you know, like, "Hey, here's your saving grace," kind of, you know? He didn't say it that way. He just said that they have unfinished business as a tag team. But maybe Mojo could take it wrong, you know? Maybe Mojo's like, "Who the hell do you think you are?" And I do think that the Hype Bros has kind of run its course. I don't see Zack Ryder turning heel. I just don't see that happening. I think Zack Ryder is going to keep being Zack Ryder for the rest of his career. He's going to be that jobber guy that the fans like, but he loses like 80% of his matches. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, Mojo is kind of – he's a guy that they obviously have some plans for. They want to get him rolling. People already dislike him. Why not give them a reason to? This – I kind of had that vibe about Mojo already, but this really makes my spidey senses tingle, because I can very, 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 very easily see a scenario in which Mojo and Zack get back together and we wind up with Mojo turning on Zack. That could be Mojo's first real feud. Mojo's never really had – he kind of had a pseudo-tiny feud against Jinder Mahal here a little bit ago before Jinder became the Maharaja. But a real feud? We haven't really seen Mojo have one of those yet, and I think that turning on Zack Ryder would get him the heat that he needs. People who don't like him, like me, would already not like him. People who are kind of indifferent about him or do kind of sort of like him would turn on him for beating up Zack, because Zack is kind of beloved. People dig Zack Ryder. He's a likable fellow, you know? And if Mojo turned on him, I think that that would indeed get the heat that Mojo would want. And I think that Mojo would work better as a heel. He could just – he doesn't have to be all hype, 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 hype and all that bullshit. He seems like a guy who could pull off asshole really, really well. He just feels – he's got that bro vibe about him, you know, just one of those bro dudes, and, you know, "Hey, bro," just doing douchebaggy shit left and right, and the kind of guy who wants to do a fucking keg stand and man, all that crap, you know. And I've known people like that who are absolutely just fine, and I'm sure that Mojo Rawley in real life is a decent human being, you know. I've seen things about him that, you know, he seems to be a pretty good guy, but I don't know, that personality type just grates on me. And I think that it could be used very, very easily to the advantage of making him a good heel. Kind of like PC Principal on South Park, you know? The intentions are maybe good. He means well, but good Lord, do you just fucking hate that guy? You know what I mean? I think Mojo could really work that quite well, and turning on Zack Ryder would be a fantastic way to springboard the heel career of Mojo Rawley. It just makes too much sense. It makes too much sense. And add to that the fact that Zack is a guy that Mojo could beat, and I don't think that people would be all that upset about it, you know? It's not like people would be like, "What the fuck is Mojo Rawley doing beating Dolph Ziggler or something. You know, it's not somebody with a huge pedigree. It's Zack Ryder. You know, we know what to expect from Zack Ryder. You kind of expect him to lose. You don't necessarily want him to. You cheer for him. You like him. But it's not like it's a soul-crushing thing if he loses. Mojo could feud with Zack, get the win over him, and I think it would do Mojo a world of good. I hope that that is the way that this is going. If it is, remember that you heard it here first. But we head out to the ring. It is time for the SmackDown Women's Champion, Naomi, to make her way out there. This is a non-title contest against one of the participants in the Women's Money in the Bank because, frankly, all of the women are in the Women's Money in the Bank with the exception of Naomi and Lana. So we go to commercial. When we return, out comes her opponent. It is Tamina. Tamina Snuka versus Naomi. But before the match really gets began, the music hits again. More music hits, and out comes Lana. She is looking resplendent in her sparkly blue dress, just looking all sorts of awesome. And she stands at ringside. As mentioned at the top, pardon me, she is able to scout Naomi. She can watch tape. She can come out and watch her matches. But Naomi can't do the same to her. There's nothing to watch. So she's taking advantage of this fact. Lana is out there scouting Naomi as Tamina throws her around the ring and just kind of beats her up. You know, Naomi's getting in shots here and there, nailing some kicks and doing some, you know, bouncy, flippy-type moves here and there. But Tamina's kind of using the power game to her advantage. We get down towards the end of this thing. Naomi with some big kicks. She winds up charging in, but Tamina catches her in midair and slams her down, gets a two count out of that one. Tamina winds up going up to the top, but before she can presumably do attempt the Superfly Splash, but before she can really get set, Naomi jumps up, kicks her, pulls her off of the top. She falls down, of course. Naomi jumps up, hits the split leg moonsault, gets the one, gets the two, gets the three. Your winner of this match is Naomi, the SmackDown Women's Champion. And she stands tall to celebrate, but before she can even really get settled in very well, she gets attacked from behind by Lana. Some of the fans are booing, some of the fans are cheering. Some of the fans over the course of the match had been chanting, "We want Rusev," and I agree with them. But Lana drops Naomi down with her version of kind of, it was like a fisherman's spine buster McGee type. It was some kind of an interesting move. And she winds up dropping Naomi with that. Maybe that's her finisher. We don't really know. I guess we'll find out at some point in the future. But Lana gets the championship, holds it up high. And I have to be completely honest with you. She looked like a million damn dollars holding that belt. It matched her dress and everything. She looks good with that belt. I'm vibing on Lana. You know, I could definitely see a scenario where basically the Eva Marie push goes to Lana, and I think that it could work very well. It won't work as well as it would have with Eva Marie because people just inherently hated her, and I think making her the champion would have been just a fucking heat magnet. It would have been hot lava, man. The floor would be lava anytime that Eva Marie came down to the aisle. But with Lana, I think it's going to be a little bit of a different dynamic because people do like her. People do like Lana. They want to cheer for Lana. So this they're going to have to play this one just right, frankly. But still, I don't see her winning the championship. But again, as I mentioned in the predictions, I said I was only 60% sure that Naomi's winning, and I'm knocking it back to 55. I still think Naomi's going to get the victory, but I'm only like 55% sure of that. 45% of me is sitting here thinking, almost half of me is sitting here thinking, man, it makes a lot of sense for Lana to win. It really does. If you really just look at it, it makes a lot of sense for Lana to win. That would be, I don't know, it's not fair. I mean, we're not talking fair here, but bear in mind that this is all scripted. This is a TV show. And if you're looking at fresh storylines and things of that nature, Lana winning just opens up a whole can of worms, man. It would be very interesting. But it really all hinges upon, you know, my opinion on whether or not she should or shouldn't win or whatever the crap. Very, 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 very largely hinges upon whether or not she's any good in the match. Because, again, I've said this a million times, most of the time pertaining to Lana. There's hot women all over the place. You know, you look anywhere you want to and you'll find a hot lady or a hot dude, even for that matter. There's hot people out there in the world. They're all over the place. And you don't have to look very far to find them. That doesn't mean that they're, you know, better than anybody else. You know what I mean? Especially as it pertains to something that is skill-based. If it's dancing or you know, or sports or this, or professional wrestling, performing in any way, shape, form, or fashion, just because someone is hot does not inherently make them good and doesn't inherently make them somebody that you want to throw your support behind. Lana is really smoking hot, just super fucking hot. But if she can't wrestle, I'm not interested. I don't want her in the ring if she can't wrestle worth a shit. Because, again, I can see hot blondes anywhere, you know? They're all over the place. And, hell, I'm about to be single. I might be looking for a hot blonde here before too terribly long. But that doesn't mean that I want to see them wrestle, you know? So it's going to take more than hotness is what I am getting at here. A lot of people like Lana. They're cheering for Lana. I get it. I like Lana too. But it is going to take more than the fact that Lana is smoking fucking hot to really earn getting a championship opportunity. If she can go out there and she can couple the hotness and the cool kind of gimmick that she's got working right now and her past history of having a cool gimmick and being an assertive female and stuff like that, you know, out there fighting for Rusev and whatnot. And if she could pair all of that with good in-ring work, total package, man. And I ain't talking Lex Luger. Lana, I'm down for Lana if that's the way that it works out. But if she goes out there and shits the bed, then I'm not interested. I will take issue with her being the champion, not because she took it from the deserving Naomi or anything like that. No, because I don't think that somebody who can't wrestle worth a shit should be the champion ever. You know what I mean? That was my issue with, like, the Great Khali and stuff in the past. I didn't have any issue with it from a storyline perspective, but it is awfully nice to have somebody who can actually do a good job, you know, to be the figurehead of your division. But we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully she wows us. Either way, Lana winds up standing over the fallen Naomi with the championship in the air, looking pretty strong heading into the pay-per-view. We then go backstage, and speaking of strong, we see the WWE champion, Jinder Mahal. He is walking towards the ring. He's got the Singhs along with him as we head to commercial break. When we return, out come the Singh brothers. Out come Jinder Mahal. They make their way down to the ring, and there's like a rug and stuff out there. This is supposed to be – this was very loosely defined as to what the hell it was going to be. All that it was said was that Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton will come face-to-face. Sure. Okay. Whatever. I don't know what that means. Are they going to sit down? Are they going to have a conversation? Are they just going to have a confrontation? Is Shane McMahon going to be there? What's the dealio? Well, we don't really know. So we have Jinder come out there. He is talking smack, as he is apt to do, about how he's the WWE champion. He's going to remain the WWE champion. He's speaking very robotically because he's Jinder Mahal and he's about as boring as sin. He said he's going to prove that Randy Orton is a coward this Sunday. He mentions, like I mentioned before, about how Bob Orton and other stars from the past are going to be in the front row. And man, you know, I just mentioned his dad and he still hasn't come out. That just means that Randy Orton is afraid of me. Tonight, on Sunday, I'm going to end the Orton legacy. And then Randy Orton's music hits. Music finally hits. So Jinder sends the Singh brothers out on the ramp to meet him, and he stands back, so you know what's going to happen. Randy comes in from behind, nails the RKO out of nowhere, really out of nowhere this time, because Jinder just flat out didn't even see it coming. He nails the RKO. He kind of slithers his way out of the ring and celebrates in the crowd as the Singh brothers are checking on Jinder. So that's where we're left here. You know, Jinder thinks he's going to get the big victory. He's very confident and all that good stuff. And given how his last couple of months has gone, there's no reason for him not to be confident. If Randy Orton has not learned the lesson that he as a veteran should have known in the first place, he's going to fucking lose, and he's going to lose handily, because what beat him for the championship is the fact that he was not paying attention to the Singh brothers. And when he did pay attention to the Singh brothers, he paid too much attention to the Singh brothers. He's out there fighting them instead of worrying about Jinder. That's what lost him the strap. So if Randy Orton has not learned that hard lesson, then the same thing's going to happen again. We'll see. But either way, Randy is standing tall to end this whole thing. I don't think that he's going to wind up getting the victory this Sunday, though. It doesn't feel like it's time. You know what I mean? I think that Randy's going to go off and do some other stuff. Who the hell knows what that is? But I'm thinking that Jinder holds onto the belt until John Cena gets a hold of him. And, you know, maybe, hell, he might even hold on to it beyond then. Who the hell knows? Well, I guess we'll see as it all plays out. I'm eager for this Jinder thing to end, though, because it's really kind of, to be frank with you, it's turning people off. And my numbers have taken a hit. It's not just SmackDown's numbers that have taken a hit ever since Jinder has showed up. There's less people listening to my show due to the fact that Jinder Mahal is the champion. People are actively going out of their way to avoid watching SmackDown because they don't like this Jinder Mahal thing. And be that fair, be it not fair, be it overreacting, be it not overreacting, I'm not here to judge. You watch whatever show you want to. I mean, I've always been a huge proponent, of If you don't like it, don't watch it. You know, don't bitch about it incessantly. If you don't like it, just turn the TV off. That's the number one way to get your point across. A lot of people are doing exactly that. And unfortunately, it means that not as many people are listening to my show. So that kind of sucks a little bit. I'm ready for this gender thing to be over with, at least for him as the world champion. He could be a mid-card champion or something all he wants to be. I don't mind Jinder Mahal, United States champion. Hell, maybe it would fit a little better even. But it looks like it's maybe going to stick around. I don't know, man. A month ago when he won the championship, I think that I even said that Randy would maybe win it back, you know, at Money in the Bank, and that this was going to be a short-lived thing. But as it goes on and on and on, I'm believing that less and less, especially with the John Cena thing kind of hovering over everything, you know, like the sword of Damocles just kind of hanging over our heads here. He's going to be here before too long, and that gender thing just seems a little too easy, you know? It's a little too easy to gift wrap and have just ready to go. So we'll see. We shall see. But tonight, Randy Orton got the upper hand. We then go backstage. Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler, they're hanging out backstage. Owens walks in, and Baron gets up looking like he's got an issue. He tells him to calm down. Tells him to calm down. He's like, you know, we should be friends tonight because I don't want to partner with you guys. I know you don't want to partner with me, but the bottom line is that we should look out for each other so we can take these guys out. If we can take out AJ and Sammy and Shinsuke Nakamura, then you know what? Then it could just be us fighting for the Money in the Bank. We won't even have to worry about them. But if we go out there and we're all pissy with each other and we're getting up in each other's faces and we're hitting each other and things of that nature, we're only going to walk into Money in the Bank in a lesser capacity than we are right now. So, yeah, we need to work together so that we can walk into the ladder match on Sunday in much better shape than where we're standing right now. Seems like everybody kind of agrees with that. Sound logic, you know what I mean? They let us know that still to come, Charlotte versus Natalya. We come back from the break, and Renee Young is backstage with Randy Orton. She, as always, is just looking adorable and Canadian, and Randy is looking sweaty. He says that he said that all he had to say in the ring just now. He will take back what is his in his hometown this Sunday. So he is being very much a proponent of a little less conversation, a lot more action, as the king would say. And so, yeah, he's saying he's going to get the job done on Sunday. I don't disbelieve him, but I don't know. I haven't seen anything to indicate to me that he's not going to make the same dumbass mistakes that he keeps on making. So, Jinder, I'm sticking with my prediction. I think Jinder's walking out as the champion still. Might be by hook or by crook, but either way, you know, Orton's only obligated one rematch. Now, given the fact that it's Shane McMahon and he just dishes shit out willy-nilly, I guess all that Randy would really have to do is go ask for another match, and hell, Shane would probably give it to him. But if Jinder can get past Orton on Sunday, he technically might not have to deal with him again, you know? We'll see. But it's time to head to the ring. It is Charlotte taking on Natalya. This is always a match that intrigues me because they had a great match at one of the early NXT TakeOver events. They had a fantastic match against one another that I just absolutely loved. And Ric Flair was in the corner of Charlotte. Bret Hart was in the corner of Natalya. They had a fantastic match. One of my favorite matches of that year, frankly. But every time they've gotten together since then, it hasn't really met that level. And I mean, I'm not expecting it to meet pay-per-view level on Raw or SmackDown, you know what I mean? But I don't know, the chemistry hasn't quite been the same as it was that one night. Until tonight, I would have to say, yes, until tonight, the chemistry was in effect. They were working well with one another this evening. I enjoyed what they had going on here. They're back and forth, back and forth. We see Becky Lynch is watching backstage and everything. They're trading holds and rolling around and doing all this stuff as we go to commercial break. When we return, Natalya has Flair and a surfboard. She's trying to make her submit. Charlotte looks like she's about to weep, but she's able to turn it around, unloads on Natalya. Charlotte goes up to the top and nails a gorgeous moonsault. She maybe has the best moonsault out there right now. I don't know. It's a really cool moonsault. But she only gets a two count out of that one as Natalya is able to kick out. We then see Carmella backstage standing alongside the big hog, James Ellsworth. They are watching the proceedings here. Charlotte charges into the corner but winds up getting sent out to the apron. She recovers from this, though, and is able to boot Natalya, dropping her down from the apron. She goes back up to the top, but Natalya comes over and turns that into a big sit-down powerbomb instead of a moonsault or whatever it was that Charlotte was planning. It was a nice sit-out powerbomb as well, and Natalya gets a two count. We see the replay of that, of course, and everything. And meanwhile, Charlotte is trying to fight her way out of a sharpshooter attempt. She winds up doing so, dropping Natalya with a big boot, only gets a two off of that one. She keeps looking up at the briefcase. She's kind of feeling it. She's feeling it. Natalya, though, takes advantage of this distraction, rolls her up for the two count. Charlotte comes right back out of that and nails natural selection for the one, the two, and the three. Your winner of this match is Charlotte. And it's a little unfortunate that it didn't go a little bit longer, frankly, because they were I felt like they were vibing this evening. Now, Natalya was, like, her selling chops and stuff like that. Natalya has her issues that are just issues that come along with Natalya. But if you can overlook those, you know, sometimes she's mechanically very good. And especially against Charlotte, they just, you know, they sometimes they catch a vibe with one another, and it's really entertaining to watch. And I really enjoyed watching this match. It was probably my favorite match of the night, frankly. It wasn't very long, but, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of awesome matches to choose from this evening. Things were just kind of thrown together, or they were super predictable multi-man matches, which I'm never a huge fan of. That might be my least favorite style of match, frankly. So Charlotte and Natalya, they put on a good show this evening. I very much enjoyed it. A bit of a preview for how things are going to go at Money in the Bank. Charlotte comes out on top of this one. She is standing tall, looking up at the briefcase as her music plays, presumably kind of staking her claim for being like, okay, I'm hot shit, I've got the upper hand heading into Money in the Bank. We'll see whether or not that is the case. We get plugs for Money in the Bank and, you know, WWE Network in general and all that good stuff. We then get another edition of the Fashion Files. We go backstage to find Breezango. Well, actually, Tyler Breeze. Pardon me, Fandango. Fandango is backstage, and he doesn't know where Tyler Breeze is, so he's looking around for him. And then we cut over to their office, you know, the precinct, yeah, the Fashion Police precinct. And Tyler's all laid out, and there's just stuff is all messed up. It looks like he got his ass kicked. But Fandango doesn't recognize this. He just kind of walks in and sees Tyler laying on the ground, and he, like, kicks him. And Tyler's like, whoa. And he's like, you're on the ground. They're morons. I love it. I love it. It's they're blatantly ripping off Zoolander. But you know what? It's that there are worse things to rip off. You know what I mean? Tyler is trying to describe who attacked him. This leads to Fandango drawing stick figures, said that they had greasy hair and two arms and blah, blah, blah. So there's anybody that could be. But I think that it's going to wind up being the Colognes, and that we're going to wind up having ourselves a match at on the pre-show coming up this Sunday. But we'll see. We'll see. We didn't get an answer to that one. They went off together to find whoever it was that attacked Tyler Breeze wearing his romp hem. They were both wearing their romp hems this week, actually. We come back from the break and we get a WWE Heroes promo. Involving a young man, Jarius Little J.J. Robertson. He was presented with the Hero Award before SmackDown went on the air, and him and his family are out there, and it's pretty awesome. We then go backstage with Dasha Fuentes. She is talking to Lana, asking about the controversy that she has created as of late. You know what? She attacked Naomi last week. She attacked her this week. She's got a title shot. She's never even had a match. Lana doesn't care what Dasha or any of the WWE Universe think of her. She says that if we saw what – she asked if we just – if what get my words straight eventually. She asked if we saw what she just did to Naomi. Lana says that she will shake the world when she crushes Naomi, becomes the new champion this Sunday. She thinks she's going to walk out with the title, and you know what? I'm at least partially inclined to believe her. It would not be surprising in the least. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean? But moving on from there, it is time for our main event of the evening. It's one that we all saw coming. Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler taking on AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Sami Zayn. As per usual, this is your typical six-man, multi-man tag match. You know, it's okay, one of the good guys is going to get beaten up a lot by the bad guys, and it's going to go back and forth, and then at the end, a bunch of people are going to hit a bunch of random-ass moves, and then we're going to wind up getting a victory. And that's exactly what happened here. Sammy, as per usual, was kind of playing the face in peril for a good little bit of it. AJ did as well. We have a couple commercial breaks here and there. When we come back from the last one, Owens is in there, and he has beaten down Sammy, who has just been getting his ass kicked for a good little bit here. Owens is talking some trash to AJ over there on the apron before stomping on Sammy in the corner. He goes for the big senton cannonball thingy, but Sammy gets his knees up. Owens then comes back in with a DDT, gets a two count off of that one. Corbin tags sandbags in, stomping on Sammy. He's got issues with Sami Zayn, as we all know. He rams Sammy back into the corner, working him over, yelling at the referee after the guy warns him and shit. He's not really feeling it here. He just wants to beat the shit out of Sami Zayn. He goes on, winds up cutting off the ring, stopping Sammy from making the hot tag. Owens comes in to follow up on that, stomping away on Sami Zayn while Corbin holds him down, and he mounts Sammy. So Sammy's getting his ass kicked, is basically the moral of this here story, until he is able to, out of the middle of nowhere, nail a blue thunderbomb on Kevin Owens. Corbin tags in along this point, and he is able to stop Sammy from tagging and getting out of the damn ring, so he's not getting his ass handed to him. But Sammy is fighting back. He winds up knocking Ziggler off of the apron after he was whipped into the corner, but Corbin splashes him anyways. Sammy then manages to nail a big clothesline. He's apt to do that here lately. He's getting his ass kicked, and then he just delivers a massive clothesline out of the middle of nowhere. He did exactly that to Baron Corbin here, as he has done many a time before. He dumps Corbin over the top rope, and he's jumping, just trying the best he can to get over for the tag, but Ziggler and Owens wind up pulling AJ and Nakamura off the apron, cutting him off. There's all kinds of fighting on the floor. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Them cats was fast as lightning. All kinds of craziness going on. Corbin knocks AJ off the apron when he tries to get up there. But as Corbin is still the legal man, as is Sammy, well, he shouldn't have taken his eyes off of Sami Zayn. Sammy takes advantage of this. He winds up nailing Corbin with a haluva kick and gets the one, the two, and the three. So your winners of this match are Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura, and AJ Styles. Once again, Sami Zayn is able to sneak a victory in against Baron Corbin. And man, you know that this has just got to be driving Baron Corbin up the damn wall. He can't be happy about this, and I think that he's really going to have a bead on Sami Zayn this Sunday. I think he's going to do everything in his power to just beat the sweet bejesus out of that dude. And it would not surprise me to see Sami Zayn making his way up the ladder, almost getting to the briefcase, and then Baron Corbin shows up. He dumps Sami Zayn, winds up getting the briefcase instead. That I could definitely see that being the scenario that plays out here. You know, just one last fuck you to Sammy along the way to becoming Mr. Money in the Bank. But we're not done here. Immediately after the bell, Ziggler comes in there and attacks AJ and Sammy both, unloading on both of them. Owens brings a ladder into the ring, which gets the fans very, very excited. Ziggler and Owens wind up grabbing the ladder, running it into Sammy to take him out. They then drop AJ with the ladder to take him out as well. Ziggler and Owens are then looking up the briefcase. They're having some words with each other about which one's going to win this Sunday. But then here comes Baron Corbin. He takes them both out. He don't give a shit if they were his partners or not. Baron Corbin is out for Baron Corbin. He takes them both out and sends Ziggler all the way out of the ring. Corbin winds up grabbing the ladder, decking Kevin Owens with it to take him out. Yeah, Ziggler is coming up on the apron, but Corbin knocks him goofy as well with the ladder. He then positions it underneath the briefcase, starts climbing up. He's looking to make a statement here, but he didn't take out everybody. Shinsuke Nakamura runs in there, tips the ladder over, which of course causes Corbin to fall down, go boom. Nakamura hits Corbin with the Kinshasa. He then stands the ladder up, climbs up there, and gets down the briefcase. Shinsuke Nakamura, if this was Sunday, would be Mr. Money in the Bank. He's the only one standing. Everybody else is down, all beaten up by ladders and whatnot. But it's not going to be that easy this Sunday. It's definitely not going to be that easy this Sunday. Nakamura is definitely the guy that, if you were looking at this on paper and, you know, in terms of kayfabe or whatever, and trying to pick a favorite, it would be hard not to go with Shinsuke Nakamura. I know Dolph Ziggler is really the favorite because he's got experience, blah, 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 blah. But Shinsuke is definitely one of the favorites in the mix here. You'd have to say one of the big favorites in the mix here in kayfabe and out of kayfabe. But still, I'm riding with Baron Corbin. It feels like it would fit him more. Maybe I'm wrong. It's not going to bother me either way. You know, I'd be happy with Baron Corbin winning because I really do think that he would fit Mr. Money in the Bank very, very well. But at the same time, if somebody like Nakamura or Sammy or AJ, if any of these guys win, I'm fine with it. You know, I could do without Dolph Ziggler winning, but even that could really be pretty entertaining, and I have nothing against Dolph, really. So, I mean, that's the one that I would be least interested in, I suppose. But any of these dudes could win, and I would be a happy camper, man. I don't know. I'm just getting the vibe that Baron Corbin is the guy who is going to win because he kind of, I don't know, he just, it feels like it's his time, and it feels like he could do the most with the briefcase at this given point in time, if that makes sense. So we'll see. We'll see. Coming up this Sunday, all kinds of craziness going on. None of the matches are predictable. We're just going to have to wait and see how it all plays out. And SmackDown tonight didn't really give us any real clues as to how that's going to go down. You know, we had a lot of people standing tall. We had a lot of people staking their claims for being like, oh, I'm in the driver's seat as we head into the pay-per-view, blah, 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 and all that crap. You know, a lot of people looking strong heading into the pay-per-view. But as we well know, that typically actually means that you're probably going to lose at the pay-per-view. So who really knows at this given point in time? This is one of the most unpredictable pay-per-views we have seen in a long time. I am very much looking forward to covering it this Sunday on Aftershock. It's worth mentioning that we'll also be discussing all of this on Thursday. I'm going to be a part of the Perfect 10 Wrestling Show, so we'll get even more talk about Money in the Bank. Maybe my opinions will have changed by then in a couple days' time, but who knows? It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this pay-per-view in a big, big way. I'm really excited for it, and I hope that you are too. But what about SmackDown? SmackDown was pretty okay, but was it really good? Did it earn a passing grade, really, is what we're concerned with here on The Late Shift. Well, we'll talk about that here in just a moment. But first, we do indeed have a couple of bills to pay and a few. We got to keep the lights on, y'all. We got to keep giving you all these podcasts for free, baby. So we got to do a little bit of this right here. You're looking for the best in pro wrestling podcasts. Look no further than Lords of Pain Radio. Now entering our fifth year of bringing you the widest variety of quality, fan-friendly shows that you'll find anywhere. We kick off our week on Monday as The Late Shift with Stephen Bell comes your way live to recap and grade Monday Night Raw shortly after the show goes off the air. Tuesdays provide a double dose as Ms. Fan and Jeff take a look outside the mainstream with the Global Revolution, and The Late Shift with Stephen Bell returns to cover SmackDown Live. Wednesday hits you with your audio prescription for all things wrestling with the Doc on The Doc Says. And Thursdays are as good as you can get as the Perfect 10 Wrestling Show breaks down the full week of WWE action. Fridays bring you an always topical and enlightening look from the right side of the pond, while Saturday unearths forgotten narratives along the path of the rise and fall of World Championship Wrestling as Mystic and Misfan bring you WCW The Legacy Series. That's plenty, but it's not all, as Sundays bring our Aftershock recap shows after each WWE pay-per-view, as well as a wide variety of LOP Radio special edition programs. With that sort of lineup, you just can't miss. So find us and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcasting resource, and be sure to pass along those five-star reviews. Because it's all about the fans' voice. Your voice. Right here on Lords of Pain Radio. All right, we are back here to, well, give a grade to this episode of SmackDown Live as we head towards Money in the Bank. It was the go-home show, if you will. And as mentioned before, we have ourselves a very, very interesting Money in the Bank coming up. It's pretty unpredictable in general, so who the hell knows what to think. Again, I do want to mention just a bit of a programming note here that I will be coming your way again this Thursday. It's Steve Week once again here on LOP Radio. You had me last night after Raw. Here I am tonight after SmackDown. Thursday coming your way to team up with The Implications, my good friend Imp there, where I'm going to be on the Perfect 10 Wrestling Show. That should be a damn good time, and we will discuss all sorts of stuff. Plus, I'll get to talk about NXT. I never get to talk about NXT, so it'll be really cool to do that as we come up on that here this Thursday. And, of course, as always, after every pay-per-view event, here I am with you, and we'll be doing the Aftershock show on Sunday to discuss Money in the Bank. We'll see whether or not my predictions came true. But for now, well, let's grade this episode of SmackDown. It wasn't bad. It was entertaining throughout, you know. There were a couple of things that weren't the greatest thing in the whole wide world, but of course that's just going to happen. I really am getting tired of these multi-man matches. It really does seem to be an anchor of SmackDown, and that was kind of a funny thing back in the day when it was Teddy Long, you know, holla, 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 and all that good stuff. He was very, very apt to make tag team matches, but it doesn't seem to have ever gone away. I'm getting tired of these multi-man matches. You know, I don't mind a tag team match, but these multi-man matches are just getting old, and there's like one every week, and it's my least favorite kind of match, you know, because they're super duper predictable. They all tend to generally play out exactly the same way. The ring gets cut off, babyface can't make the tag, so he gets beat down a whole super duper bunch. One of them does at the very least, maybe two of them. But then we get the hot tag at the end, everybody's trading moves all over the place, and based off of the fact that everybody's hitting moves on everybody else, somebody gets distracted and there's a pinfall victory there. Bickety bam, the end. It's the same shit over and over and over again, and when that is one or two of the things that you're dealing with every single week when trying to grade an episode of SmackDown, it doesn't help a whole hell of a lot. And we did. We had two of the motherfuckers this week. They bookended the show. We had the New Day and Breezango taking on the Colognes and the Usos. Again, I like everybody involved in this match. Very entertaining, in my opinion. I had a good time watching it, but at the same time, it was just like, okay, who really gives a shit? You know? You knew what was going to happen. And exactly that did happen. The New Day and Breezango get the victory, and yay, happy, happy, fun times. It was fun to see them all dancing around and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, it just wasn't a very interesting match. It didn't do anything to further the issue between the New Day and the Usos, frankly. I didn't really care. I guess that's the issue with it. I just didn't really care. But it was decent enough. It was still entertaining. That's the thing that you have to give it. Even if it's something that I didn't necessarily care about a whole hell of a lot, I was still entertained by it. But anyways, we had Naomi and Tamina, which was fine. It was nothing amazing. But it was probably Tamina's best singles outing that I've maybe ever seen. I don't know. It's been – Tamina's been around for longer than you think. You know, so it's kind of hard to even remember good Tamina matches from back in the day because, damn, you know, it seems like she's gone for these super long stretches here and there. But this is definitely one of the best that I can remember having seen, and I think it maybe is the best that I can remember having seen. So good for her on that, and Naomi acquitted herself well. She's entertaining to watch. She's like the female Rob Van Dam, basically, only, you know, not as stiff and not as cool as RVD is. Though they do both apparently like, you know, like Dayglo type shit. But, again, I digress. This was a pretty good match, and there was nothing wrong with it at all. It did what it needed to do. Naomi looked strong. Tamina didn't exactly, but, you know, Tamina didn't exactly look like she was going to be beating down the door for the Money in the Bank in the first place. You know what I mean? She's easily the least likely to win the entire thing. But then the aftermath with Lana beating up Naomi was pretty entertaining, so that was pretty cool too. But, yeah, we had the confrontation. Well, they said that Jinder and Randy were going to come face-to-face. That never happened. It was false advertising. What actually happened was that Jinder came face-to-face with the rug that he had out there on the mat because Randy RKO'd his ass. So, I mean, that was a fairly entertaining segment, but I'm just kind of done with Jinder. I don't dislike him necessarily. I'm just done with him. He bores me. He really bores me, and I'm ready to do something different. I'm ready for the belt to go on somebody else and to actually – call me crazy, but I like it when the main feud on a brand, you know, when the championship feud is something that is actually entertaining, you know. So it's been kind of easy to give them a little bit of a pass because when you compare them to Raw hasn't had a championship feud because the champion only shows up when he damn well pleases. But now Raw is putting together a championship feud over there between Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar that is hot. It is hot. It's looking kind of awesome at the moment, and it's not doing any favors to SmackDown and their champion Jinder Mahal. They look really fucking weak by comparison, so I don't know about all that noise, but I'm kind of done with Jinder, but at the same time, I don't hate him or nothing. It was a decent enough segment. It did what it needed to do. I'm just not very interested, frankly. The Charlotte versus Natalya match, as mentioned, probably my favorite match of the night, though that really doesn't say a whole hell of a lot because the pickings were kind of slim as it pertains to good matches this evening. But I thought it was pretty good. It had its faults, of course, mostly due to Natalya just kind of not being very good at some specific things, but she is very good at other things, and I thought that the chemistry with Charlotte was pretty damn good this evening. So, yeah, it was a good match. I enjoyed it. Thought it went damn well. And then we have the main event, Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler versus AJ Styles, Shinsuke, and Sami Zayn. Yet another multi-man match that did exactly what you would anticipate what it would do. I mean, if you had asked me how this would go, I would be like, okay, babyfaces are probably going to get the victory, and then the heels are going to fight afterwards, and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't have necessarily predicted that Shinsuke would be the last one standing and holding the briefcase, but you know what? Send him home happy. So, you know, maybe I would have predicted that if I'd really thought about it pretty good, AJ or Shinsuke or something. They seem to really be kind of hinting towards the fact that Shinsuke Nakamura, he has that intangible vibe about him. Nobody really knows what to expect from him. He's never been in a ladder match that we're aware of, so who the hell knows what is going to happen here as we get to Money in the Bank. So they're kind of painting him as a favorite, you know? I again, though, I'm still riding with Baron Corbin. I don't know. I think he'd make a good Mr. Money in the Bank. So the match was fine, but it was a six-man match. It was exactly what a six-man match should be. You know, it wasn't the best six-man match of all time. It wasn't the worst six-man match of all time, but that's because the overwhelming majority of six-man matches just fall into that middle category of like, it was a match that had happened. You know, it was entertaining for what it was, but there was really nothing to invest in on either side. You know, it just was what it fucking was. You know what I mean? So this episode of SmackDown had a lot of that. There were a lot of things that just kind of fucking were what they were. But it did a decent job of building to the pay-per-view, I guess. I mean, it's a weird pay-per-view because so many people are tied up in specific matches. All the women are tied up in one match, pretty much, with the exception of Lana and Naomi. And all of the main male superstars that you give a shit about are tied up in one match because I don't really give a shit about Randy Orton or Jinder Mahal at this point. That match I could really give half a fuck about. I'm intrigued from a storyline perspective just to be like, okay, where are they going to go next? But apart from that, I don't really care who wins, you know? I don't have a preference either way because I'm not a huge Randy Orton fan and I'm not a huge Jinder Mahal fan. I don't give a shit. So at the end of the day, it doesn't impact me positively or negatively. I'm just kind of like, all right, cool, it's a thing. Right on. Hooray. So this one gets it's going to get the same grade as Raw. This is a C-plus show. There was nothing terrible about it. And it had one pretty damn good match between Natalya and Charlotte, though, I mean, it didn't get a whole hell of a lot of time, so it's not like it was the best shit ever or anything like that, but it was all right. But at the end of the day, it didn't do anything all that terrible. It did what it needed to do. It got us it led us down the path towards the pay-per-view, and yeah, that's that. I don't know what much more you could really expect from it. So, yeah, C+, because it was better than average, you know, but not by much. Not by much. If there were something between C and C+, then it would probably get that. But, yeah, I'm just dealing with what I was dished here. A reminder that I will be on the Perfect 10 Wrestling Show this upcoming Thursday, so if you want to hear some more from me, then tune in on that program upcoming Thursday, just a couple days from now. And, of course, I will be here with you on Sunday, as we talk about Money in the Bank and the aftermath of that pay-per-view. Looks like it's going to be damn entertaining. I am looking forward to seeing it go down, and I am very much looking forward to sitting here and chit-chatting about it with you guys on Aftershock. So please join me then. Until then, though, if you get back with me next Monday or Tuesday, whenever it is that we hear from one another again, I again encourage you to check me out on social media at Stephen F. and Bell on Twitter, The Late Shift with Stephen Bell on Facebook, and again, I want to be the MySpace Maharaja. The Late Shift with Stephen Bell is on MySpace, so check it out, y'all. Check it out, the MySpace Maharaja. That's kind of the shit, y'all. It's kind of cultural appropriation, I suppose. But damn it, it just sounds good. It sounds good. Sometimes you got to be cool with shit sounding good. Anywho, it's going to sound good to talk to you guys again here in a few days, so hopefully you will join me. Until then, please take care of yourselves out there in the really real world, and remember that nothing is trivial, all right? All right, guys, much love. We'll catch you next time. Bye, everybody. Bye.